This is Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aureus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Michael and Nick? Can you feel it?
It's working.
Do you feel it? The freedom feels. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yep. This is Freedom Fiends. So, how you doing, guys? What's new?
I am really excited about that International Women's Day that just happened.
The International Women's of the World, Worker Women, Workers of the World.
Yeah, yeah.
It's socialism in panties.
It took place on Wednesday, but it was scheduled for Tuesday. It took so long for them to get ready that they had to do it a day later.
Oh, man. Yeah. I posted a picture of my cat man-spreading today. That was the picture.
Yeah, well, that's nothing. When they did that Million Man March on Washington and everybody wound up in Seattle because none of the men would ask for directions, that was a mess, too.
Breaking news. Lou tells joke from the 1940s. All right, so.
It was the 90s.
All right,
God 90s. God's sakes.
Hey, the 90s.
Nick wasn't alive 40s. Then, either.
So, I got a show to recommend. I recommend shows sometimes.
Do tell.
Yeah, there's a new show called Better Things. It's the worst title. Better Things. It's created by Louis C.K. and Pamela Alvdon or whatever her name is. Do you know
Anderson?
Her? No, not Pam Anderson. No, Pamela Alvdon, I think is her name. I'll look it up. She plays Bobby Hill. She's the voice actor for Bobby Hill.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
She's great. It's I don't want to spoil it, but it's on, I don't know, it's on the, where did I watch it? Maybe Amazon Prime, maybe Netflix, I don't remember. Maybe somewhere else and it's on neither, I don't know. But find it if you can, watch it if you like, you know. Louis C.K. is kind of doing something. It's kind of surprising for a, you know, guy that tells toilet jokes sometimes. He's actually kind of risen to the point of maturity in his writing where he can still make you laugh your butt off. But he can also do things that are kind of heartfelt without being saccharine, which is really tough to do. Pamela Adlon, A-D-L-O-N. She's about 4 feet tall. She's in a lot of Louis stuff.
She's fun-sized.
Yeah, she's fun-sized. Yeah, she used to have a TV show together. Before the Louis show, they had some TV show together. I forget what it's called, but it was kind of like a modern All in the Family. Not that crass, but it was very un-PC, and it got in a lot of trouble, which, you know, I'm always interested in things that get in a lot of trouble. So speaking of writing and things that work well and the hero's journey and stuff like that, we're going to talk a bit tonight about how to do journalism. And in a bigger sense, you know, even if you don't want to be a journalist, I think this is useful stuff if you want to be, if you want to do any kind of storytelling. And I don't really consider us journalists most of the time. We've done a bit of it more when Nima Vidadi was on the show. And I think Lou's broken a few stories and actually done journalism and done man on the street interviews. So, what do you think? That kind of thing.
Broke the stories, glued them back together for the win.
Yep. So we're going to show you how to do this tonight. Hey. Tonight, Nick, when I wrote you and asked you if you'd heard of Will Grigg, what did you say to me? I kind of liked your answer.
let me see. I can't remember exactly what I said. Oh, I said, I don't know. I didn't know who he was.
Who is that old guy?
That's right. I came to Liberty through the Freedom Fiends and Bad Quakers, so I don't know anybody else. I don't read Rothbard, and I don't know economics. All I know is these guys. I don't know anybody else.
You're the perfect puppet. If I had a son, he'd look like Nick.
Yep.
But only if the mother was a French poodle.
We're going to cover something called... So we built Nick. We built him out of a kit that we bought on eBay. Nick came on the show. How old were you when you came on, Nick?
15.
15. Yep. And now you are... Are you 19
18.
Yet? Still 18. All right. Yeah. And we talked you into dropping out of school and starting a business. And you're actually making money now, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm making money at the moment.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I was making money last summer, and now I'm going to be making money again this
summer. Hey, well, that's what better lesson is there in business than sometimes you have down years?
Exactly.
I would say. So Lou's clicking away furiously. So let's get to the topic. So I want to talk about a few things. One is Michael Dean's three rules of radio, and then some stuff that's more journalism in general, but it's also important for like any kind of storytelling, whether you're making videos, talking around a campfire, relaying a story to a friend, or doing any kind of talk media, podcast, radio, anything like that. So with radio, my three rules, and I think if you're doing radio, you should write these down and have them in front of you on so you see them when you're doing your show for the first year. Watch the clock, don't bury the lead, and be ready to catch. And watch the clock isn't as important in things that don't go timed like a radio show. Like a radio show is timed to the atomic microsecond. Like this is all controlled with atomic clocks. We start at 6 minutes after the hour. And if we don't start talking at 6 minutes after the hour, they put on jazz music. I mean, there's no waiting, you know, to start the show. So Lou's breathing. Stop breathing. That's another thing. Don't breathe into the mic. Be off the mic when you're not talking. So I would say there's watch the clock even in things that don't go directly to a clock. Because with the watch the clock in radio, it's literally you have an atomic clock and you have the show clock, which is the pie chart that shows when you talk and when there's ads, when you can go pee-pee and have a slice of pizza. But even if you don't have that demanding of a clock where you have to be like, you know, the thing with watch the clock with that is, like, for instance, you don't start a story when there's 15 seconds left of the segment. You know, you might start it a minute before the segment and then like introduce it and say, we'll talk about this more when we get back from the free market. But you don't, you know, it's very unradio-like and doesn't sound very good to just be talking and have it cut off in the middle of the sentence, which will probably happen in this show, but it happens less than it would if we didn't pay attention to it or at least be aware of the fact that the problem with me is sometimes, you know, we count on the music to know when the break is coming up. And sometimes I turn it all the way down during the ads. I should turn it almost all the way down, but sometimes I turn it down so low because talk radio ads are literally worse than Hitler almost. And I just can't stand them unless I make them, because I make good ones that don't make you want to scream and go get a sandwich. And so I miss sometimes in the end of the next break, but I generally keep an eye on the clock and an eye on the PDF to try to not, you know, lose and be unprofessional and go into the break. I would say that even in stuff where it's not timed, be aware of the clock in the sense of, you know, don't bore people. Don't stay too long on one subject. Yeah, cool. I think, was that my clock telling me I'm staying too long on one subject? I think it was.
No, that was a new email via AOL, because I'm already in the app, or I'm sorry, because I'm already on the web page. It doesn't say, you've got mail.
Web page? I don't know what this web page is of which you speak. Anyway, back to journalism class. So watch the clock. That's rule number one. And I would say, you know, if you're telling stories around the campfire too, not just don't talk too long, don't talk too short. Tell about what your audience can take and maybe a little less so you leave them wanting, but also kind of pace yourself of don't spend too much time on the introduction and not long enough on the payoff or vice versa. So watch the clock. You know, secondly, don't bury the lead. Burying the lead is if we come on all excited and say, so yeah, I mean, these things are like, you know, on page 14 of it, it talks about how it specifically is with the Windows operating system specifically for the Samsung smart television. And we've completely buried the lead that the story we're talking about, for instance, is, you know, the CIA, WikiLeaks hacking document dump. So you start with telling what you're going to talk about in a very broad way, almost in a headline kind of way. And then you go down in an inverted pyramid. And we're going to talk more at length about the inverted pyramid later. But you basically try to say what's going on, then give more information, then give more detailed information, then get into the fine details, which actually came from when they used to send news via telegram. They would give the most important details first and the most nuanced details last in case the telegraph wire got cut by Indians, American Native Americans, and the story didn't get through. So at least you got the most important part of the story through. Also, it's how people read. They want to hear the thing first, even if they don't know what this stuff is. The mind wants to hear, you know, the thing that it's the, you want the thing that pulls them in. I mean, even in link bait, you have the thing that pulls you in. And then be ready to catch is my third thing. And these are things that most people, even if they're good talkers and they've done podcasts and they've done videos, when they get on radio, or if they've done a lot, if they're good talking, but they haven't done even podcasts that aren't live on radio, you have to be ready to catch. In other words, if I say, if I throw to somebody, if I say, okay, Nick, read the first part of that inverted pyramid thing. So like in show prep, we'll send each other links and you should have them open, especially if someone says, after the break, we're going to be talking about the inverted pyramid, or as my English teacher used to call it, the crotch shaped writing style.
That's what they called it?
Yeah, that's what my filthy English teacher called it back in pre-PC private school. I knew Nick
would
like
that. Did you go to a church school?
I got his attention. I went to a church school, but my English teacher was a Jewish agnostic liberal socialist from New York City. You know, basically everyone they warn you about now, but I learned a lot from the guy. I like him.
It is also sometimes called a summary news lead or a bottom line up front.
I thought you were going to say they're sometimes also called Democrats. Yeah. All right. And that was not an anti-Jewish remark. It's just, it's a stereotype. Oh, he was also gay. Yes, a gay bearded socialist intellectual from New York City. Did I leave anything out?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
I hear you clicking. Is that the hamsters in my brain?
I was going to make a hamster sound, but they just go click, click, click.
This is the Freedom Fiends with 40-Minute Journalism School. Title's going to be something like that, depending on how many minutes into this we talk about journalism and things and how to write. So we're talking about the inverted pyramid format, or as my English teacher called it at the church farm school in the late 70s, early 80s.
The summary news lead.
What's that?
The summary news lead.
Lou really likes that. The summary news lead.
Well, yeah, I kind of like the bluff though. Bottom line up front.
Oh, I never heard that. Bottom line up front. Bluff. Yeah. Yeah, and someone, when I mentioned the inverted pyramid yesterday on the show, someone said, "What's that about? Is that about the Illuminati?" And I said, "No, they have a top up pyramid. Their normal pyramid. This is to fight the Illuminati. Use the inverted pyramid." So,
well, Nick, this is the opposite of a multi-level marketing scheme.
Yep. Because in a multi-level marketing scheme, or usually in any kind of cults, the revealing the information to you is a normal pyramid. Like, you start out with the stuff everybody knows that they read the paper anyway, and you slowly get to more and more and more, like to the top of the pyramid, to the stuff, the rarefied air, where, you know, the inner circle of Stefan Molyneux, where you have to give him your semen in a vial once a week, as well as your money. Allegedly. All right. So Nick, I was trying to make this a straight thing. So, like, and I just buried the lead, because most people listening to this who Googled inverted pyramid and found this and listened to it and thought they'd actually learn something from it, and they will, don't know who Molyneux is. He's an alleged cult leader, actually, who we have some people who were, we have some friends that were sucked into his cult, and now they're out, and we've interviewed them. So that's what we're talking about when we say
Molyneux. I think the segment's about as straight as Steve Miller.
Hey, he identifies as a white male. Boy, where is this even coming from? All right, he's actually working a show tonight that's all like feminist poets and comics and stuff.
Oh,
he's
my heart goes out to him. He's suffering right now, and my heart just goes out to him. I wish nothing but the best for him.
I know, that sounds like purgatory. That sounds like if Hillary had won, you know, what she'd do with people that are caught with bullets, who got rid of their guns but still had a bullet, instead of killing the, it sounds like liberal re-education camp is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, they'd herd you into a theater and make you watch a bunch of social
Amy
justice
Schumer
poets.
Videos.
Yeah, Amy Schumer. No, it's poets, slam poetry, man. All right, and slam comedy, feminist comedy.
But anyway, Steve Miller needs to be rescued from there. There needs to be like a SWAT team to go in there.
We should send the Libertarian SWAT team. I know, if they had that threat management thing they have in Detroit, if they had that in Philly, we could, as a joke, pay them to go in and save Steve and just carry him out of there. Hut, 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 hut. I'd do it. I'd chip in on it.
Get the tactical team from the Blues Brothers in there.
Yeah. All right. So
I heard you going hut.
We're gonna. Yeah, they do that in there. I think that's where I learned that. I don't think they ever did that. But we'll have all these links in the show notes. So Nick, before we get hit by the clock blocked. Yeah. Before we get clock blocked, can you say that on radio? I heard a good one today. You know how I always say, when people say we need to, and they're talking about the government or society, and I say, you had a mouse in your pocket. Someone called that now. They called that doing that. Someone called that mouse pocketing. He's guilty of mouse pocketing. It's all one word.
Yeah, like poor Nick. He's Googling everything that we're referencing today because he has no idea what we're talking pocketing. About.
I know. Yeah.
No, so I think I understood pocketing. All that. That's within my age range.
So I Nick, remember read when the inverted pyramid first paragraph here. You got just enough time if you quit the jackassery to actually get it in before the break. Go ahead.
Sure. The inverted pyramid is a metaphor used by journalists and other writers to illustrate how information should be prioritized and structured in a text. Example, a news report. It is a common method for writing news stories, and this is a way to communicate the basics about a news report in the initial sentences. It is widely taught to mass communication and journalism students and is systematically used in Anglophone media.
I'm being oppressed. Oh, you missed one part too. It says it has adaptability to other kinds of texts, i.e. e.g. blogs and editorial columns. And I'd say also non-text like radio. And it's also used in news reporting, but that's written too before it's spoken. So we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. Journalism.
Germanism.
Yep. I like this. I just read this. The day without blank protests are a first world luxury. Check your privilege, people.
Yeah. True. The day without sandwiches?
Yeah. Is that a thing? That's funny. All right. We're getting off the topic here of how to journalist. We're talking about the inverted pyramid or crotch form of writing. Can you read the... Oh, you got a comment? What did you say? Yeah.
Yes, before we go on, the top part of the inverted pyramid is the most newsworthy info, meaning the five right. W's and one H, and we'll go into a little bit more detail on that when we
Which is real quickly who, what, when, where, how, and why, which are things you need to satisfy in a story, really. Mm-hmm. So, and then secondly, what's the less important part of the pyramid, but next, but important?
The important details.
Yes.
And then that's followed by the other general information, background information, and normally where they say, and this is why we need more government. But anyway.
Yeah. Or you know, the fact that the guy that the cop shot had been arrested once for smoking marijuana, so therefore it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then they'll do an interview with the guy with a flat top who is 125% guaranteed to say, well, if he'd have just obeyed, he'd still be alive today.
Yeah.
So anyway, the description.
But let me interject there. This is not just a fascist news format. It's a very good news format for exposing bad government and in other words, government. So people should learn it. All right, go ahead, Lou.
Okay, description. The inverted or upside-down pyramid can be thought of as a simple triangle with one side drawn horizontally at the top and the body pointing down. The widest part at the top represents the most substantial, interesting, and important information the writer means to convey, illustrating that this kind of material should head the article, while the tapering down portion illustrates that other materials should follow in order of diminishing importance. It is sometimes called the summary news lead style, or bottom line up front, bluff.
Bluff.
The opposite, the failure to mention the most important, interesting, or attention-grabbing elements of a story in the opening paragraphs is called burying the lead.
And I got to say, a lot of people, when they first get on the Freedom Fiends, are guilty of burying the lead. And I have to say, stop burying the lead. And I may have buried the lead in not explaining to some of those people what burying the lead means. And on radio, you have to even work a little harder at not burying the lead sometimes, because I think, for instance, when we were podcast only and we'd start talking about, you know, the price of Bitcoin today and what things have driven it up or driven it down this week, on radio, I would preface that with actually giving a couple paragraphs on what Bitcoin is, because there are still, I don't know if there are still people who haven't heard of it, but I know there are still people who don't really know what it is of how to describe it. I hear you breathing, Lou. And then there are definitely people who might even understand it, but have never used it. So on radio, you have to kind of, because radio is broadcasting instead of narrowcasting, podcasting is generally considered narrowcasting in that it's specifically to a certain group. The joke that Lou and I made up was, what's the show called, Lou? The imaginary show about fishing.
Oh, the fly fishing and Maserati repair show.
Yeah. On the internet, you could have a podcast called the Maserati and fly fishing repair show. And there are probably a couple hundred people in the world who love fly fishing and Maserati repair who would listen to that show. On radio, that wouldn't work. You have to be more general interest on radio. On radio, almost every station and almost every network has a outdoor show, sometimes fishing only, but usually fishing and hunting, and then has a car show, but nothing as specific as the Maserati repair show or the fly fishing show. So that's an example I use as a joke on the difference between radio and podcasting. And Nick, you want to read this next part on here while Lou clicks away loudly?
Sure.
Thanks.
Other styles are also used in news writing, including the anecdotal lead, which begins the story with an eye-catching tale or anecdote rather than the central facts, and the Q&A or question and answer format. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
It
doesn't make sense. It does make sense. Which one didn't make sense? Both or
and the Q&A or question answer, which begins the story. Oh.
You know, it's really commonly used now in link bait, anecdotal would be, and I'm using link bait examples, but I'll also give a news example. Anecdotal link bait would be, she tried eating fish for a week. See what happened next. that would be the link baity version of it, but the news version of anecdotal, it more likely would be used probably with local news or specific news like maybe music magazine or culture magazine like Rolling Stone, but something like let's see, Bob Marley's making changes in his life. Read about it here, you know. Even though I think he's dead, but something like that. That would be an anecdote. Question and answer would be in the, for link bait, it would be, find out the three things in your bedroom that can kill you. And in real news, actually, sometimes that's used in news at the end, at the beginning of news, at the end of the first section going to the ad, they'll say, find out the thing in your home that can kill you. Find out later, and they'll do it at the end of the show to keep people sitting through the boring news. Mm-hmm. But the question answer format. Let's see. An article called "Are you a real libertarian?" Take the quiz or find out. In this article, okay. That'd be the question's the headline. The answer is in the body of the article. That's also used a lot in writing advertisements. And I don't want to discount advertisements in this. This style works a lot in advertisements. Although in news, this is more of a three-act format. The most newsworthy info, the important details, and the general background info. In radio, it's often a two-part because they're so short. It's often, are you tired of blah, blah, blah? Well, we have a solution. Like a lot of ads start with, there's a problem, we have a solution. Although, actually, I'd say a lot of them have three-act format because it's usually, do you have a problem? We have a solution. And then the general info and background info, like, why you should use this product and where you can get it. So, does that explain it?
Yeah, makes sense to me.
All right, then read on from The Inverted Pyramid.
The Inverted Pyramid may also include a hook as a kind of prologue. Typically, a provocative quote, question, or image. Those are a lot of the examples.
I think we just explained a bunch of those, but yeah.
Yep.
You won't believe what happens next.
You won't believe. Nick reads a story. You won't believe what happened next.
And that is to entice the reader into committing to the story. And this format is valued for two reasons. First, readers can leave the story at any point and understand it, even if they do not have all the details. And second, it conducts readers through the details of the story.
And I would say that a lot of mainstream news these days abuses that, in that they know that readers can leave at any point and understand it. Like very pro-state news will often do things like, headlines like, police kills armed man. And then like at the end of the story, you'll find out he was legally armed and he never pulled the gun or showed it to the police or something like that. I've actually seen things like that. So this can all be abused too. So, and I would say that link bait is kind of an abusing of it also, but so go on.
Right. This system also means that information less vital to the reader's understanding comes later in the story, where it is easier to edit out for space or other reasons. That's exactly what you just said.
Yep.
This is called cutting from the bottom. Rather than petering out, a story may end with a kicker, a conclusion, perhaps a call to action, which comes after the pyramid. This is particularly common in feature style. I don't know what that is.
All right. Lou, you want to read some of the history?
Yes. Historians disagree about when the form was created. Many say the invention of the telegraph sparked its development by encouraging reporters to condense material to reduce costs. Studies of because I think that was done by the beep. But anyway, studies of the 19th century news
stories. Yeah, they paid by the beep. No, it actually cost per word to send things on telegraph back then, and the government had a monopoly. So even the newspapers paid.
So they used bigger words. And they were smarter. So anyway, studies of the 19th century news stories in American newspapers, however, suggest that the form spread several decades later than the telegraph, possibly because the reform era's social and educational forces encouraged factual reporting rather than more interpretive narrative styles.
Now, you know what? There's something they don't include here that my English teacher, who called this crotch-shaped writing, also said to me that makes a lot more sense to me than the telegraph thing if this happened later, was he said that back when they used to lay out newspapers, and you know, he was telling me this before they laid out newspapers by hand, when they were actually laid out on a light board and then photographed, and
the
they
made a roll
of broadsheet, made a tin up piece of tin out of them, that they would write the stories long with the most important stuff at the top, basically so you could cut it, like they said, cutting from the bottom. But he said it for a different reason. He said that sometimes late in the day, people would buy advertisements, and they wanted to be able to, like the newspaper was, it was X number of pages, like every edition of some papers were a certain number of pages, or else it had to be in multiples of four because of the way they print it. So, or at least multiples of two because they fold it over. So, there were limits of how long it could be. One, and if it was laid out a certain way, like let's say at 10 minutes before they go to press, somebody calls up and says, "Yeah, I want to buy $10,000 worth of advertising," like 8 column inches for the next 6 weeks or something. They could easily cut a story in half without even having to read it. It was a really easy method of editing, where the editor could just chop out paragraphs at the bottom and stick ads there without even having to read it to see if the cut made sense. That makes a lot of sense to me.
It does.
But, yeah.
I think it's funny that it mentions the reform era social and educational forces encouraged factual reporting rather than more interpretive narrative styles. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that he's attributed with a quote that says that people would be better to be completely uninformed than to read the newspapers of his day.
Also, real quick before we go to break, I think that in a way, people's writing has suffered overall with the internet because there are no page limits anymore. When it's free, no matter how long it is to publish, I think people tend to overwrite. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi. A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Woof. Woof. So, talking about inverted pyramid style crotch shaped writing. So we got an example here. I'll read it. This is from this is an essay on the forum. It's a alleged news article about killing the guy who killed more Americans than Hitler. Yeah, Adolf Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. This evening at 9:30 at Ford Theater, the president, while sitting in his private box with Mrs. Lincoln, Mrs. Harris, and Major Rathburn, was shot by an assassin who suddenly entered the box and approached behind the president. The assassins then leapt upon the stage, brandishing a large dagger or knife, and made his escape in the rear of the theater. The pistol ball entered the back of the president's head and penetrated nearly through the head. The wound is mortal. The president has been insensible ever since it was inflicted and is now dying. Insensible. I don't know what that means, but I can imagine it means you're not operating normally. After the same hour, an assassin, whether the same or not, entered Mr. Seward's apartment and, under the pretense of having a prescription, was shown to the secretary's sick chamber. The assassin immediately rushed to the bed and inflicted two or three stab wounds on the chest and on the face. It is hoped the wounds may not be mortal. The apprehension is that they will prove fatal. The nurse alarmed Mr. Frederick Seward, who was in an adjoining rented room, and he hastened the door to his father's room, where he met the assassin, who inflicted upon him one or more dangerous wounds. The recovery of Frederick Seward is doubtful. It is not probable that the president will live through the night. General Grant and his wife were advertised to be there at the theater. I think this is a really bad example of it. First of all, it's really old-timey writing, and second of all, it's using really weird sentence structures that it didn't even need to back then. But it still gives you the idea of, you know, if you only had the first, three sentences of this, you'd have the president was killed, who was killed, what happened, you know, who, why, when, where, how, and the fact that the ward is, you know, he's not expected to live. And then after that, there's other details. So, comments, gentlemen?
I think it's really interesting, just because I've known a little bit about it, just from being on radio with you, especially burying the lead, that kind of thing. But I'm kind of realizing that I should be employing this in more of my writing.
You should.
Like, especially in my emails.
Like
for marketing or whatever.
Yes. Especially with marketing, because people often don't read the whole thing. And if they are only going to read part of it, you still want them to be marketed to by the first couple sentences of it. Also, another thing, you just did something that I try to recommend against in writing. You said it's interesting, or it is interesting. You didn't say what it is. Now, through context, I know that you meant this style of writing, but, you know, it's the most common reason, in my opinion, that speaking or writing or communicating is unclear is because of pronoun problems. And I don't mean the problems of there being 128 synthetic ones that people forget to use the right ones. My preferred pronoun, by the way, is BIP, but as in Bitcoin and Bipcot. But you didn't say what it was. I knew what it was, but I would have said that sentence of, I think that this style of writing is interesting and I should be employing it more. Because you could, when you said it, you could have been talking about, you know, in particular, what we just finished reading, which was this fake, you know, Lincoln assassination example, or any number of things. But I would caution, you know, I'm not picking on you, Nick. It just reminded me of something. Sure. I wanted to get in this conversation was be really careful with confusion with pronouns, especially when you're talking about he or she, and there's more than one he or she in the topic. That's really
and you have to make sure that the object or person identifies by that pronoun.
Are you making a joke or are you being serious? You're making a joke.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm making a joke.
All right. But, you know, I mean, examples would be like, Nick and Lou came over to my house and he stole my pen. You know, who stole my pen? You don't know. That's a really simple example. Usually the confusion is in longer, more complicated paragraphs with more action and more events than that. But it's very, very common.
But a dedicated fiend would know that Nick is the punk juvenile delinquent of the two of us.
Yeah.
And I am the dear sweet bacon emperor that would never steal a pen.
Yep.
I guess we'll be back in the second hour with more of the X Number of Minute Journalism School.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth Justice American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth Justice American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth Justice American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth Justice American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
I suppose I can use a big monster jump in there.
I don't have it pulled up, but I don't have memories.
Oh, for God's sake. This is Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Kratom 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. You're welcome for my service.
You are. Yes. Thanked. For your service. Yeah, we got Lou Fiend, Nick Hazelton, the Hazy Yak, and MWD. We're talking about journalism, how to do it, more specifically, how to communicate clearly. In the first hour, if you're in the two towns, one in Wyoming and one in South Dakota, that missed the first hour, you should probably go on the Freedom Fiends and find the... It's going to be called something like 60-minute journalism school or 50-minute, 45-minute, depending on how long we spend on it after we cut out the ads and put in less of our own. But this is teaching people how to do stuff. And if you're in Wyoming or South Dakota, you probably should go back and listen to this because I live in Wyoming and this stuff is sorely needed here more than most places. But not to diss my own place too much, I got to say that this really isn't taught much anymore, how to actually communicate clearly. The person I know who most recently went to school, who went in 2007, which was right before the whole "we're a special snowflake" thing started, by then, which actually started in when Obama took office for the most, started full force. It was sort of creeping in before then, but Lou, you're breathing. And I asked her, you know, did you learn this stuff in school? And she's like, no, I took a class called mass communication and we didn't learn any of this stuff. Like, basically they teach you, you know, it almost seems like what they teach you in communication classes now is how to handle things that other people create and disseminate them. Like, they don't even teach you how to create, or they just think that you're such special snowflakes that anything you write is an A+ to the world, and they just want to teach you how to get it out there, like, you know, how to operate a video camera and how to do some basic editing. So this stuff's even important in editing too, and it's even important in like sending an email. Like Nick was saying that this was really good for he's happy to learn this stuff because it'll come in handy when sending out press releases for his business. Another thing I thought about during the break is that emails are kind of a special form of this same type of communication, to where you're breathing, Nick. I mean, Lou, right into the mic. I can hear it loud. Please don't. in emails, basically the headline, it's different because it goes the most important summary of the whole thing has to go into the subject line, because people who get a lot of emails, especially if you're sending out literal press releases to a press organization, they get literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. I mean, a lot of people say, oh God, I get hundreds of emails, but do you really? I mean, I get a lot of emails and I probably get 40 or 50 a day, including, you know, threads of emails where I write back and forth with somebody and, you know, we each send 5 emails. So altogether that adds up to probably, you know, 75 on a really busy day for me. But people in news get, you know, 300 or 400 or 500 emails a day. So your email subject line has to make them click on the email. I mean, they don't even read all their emails. They stuff that isn't even spam. You know, it is their job to have news to report or to have a topic to report if they're a specialty magazine or website or something. But I'll tell you a secret. This is a really important thing of getting your stuff out in the news and out in the world. If you do it right, you're not bothering the person, you know, at the magazine or whatever. You're doing them a favor, because if you basically hand them a complete story, you're doing their job for them. You know, if you hand them like, here's the topic, here's why this is important, you know, here's the angle, in other words, like the subject line should have the angle of what's different about this yak farm or this yak meat or this rock and roll band or this radio show or this book that you're pimping. That should be what's different about it and what their angle is, and then information, and then all they have to do is fill in the blanks and you've done their work for them. I gotta say too, you guys are like most improved players too. Both of you were bad radio personalities when you had stuff in the rough when you started, but you were not good and you know it, and I can say that now because you're both pretty darn good now. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is because we've been getting some critiques lately from somebody. I think it's Shulman, but I'm not sure, saying like certain choices I have in brand newly minted fiends, not you guys, other people, that like I shouldn't have these people on the show. First of all, don't tell me how to run my show. This is never a show where I'm going to take input from the listeners. Never, never, never do it. I don't care if it's the best news in the world. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do what you say. This is my show. Secondly, if I have someone on the show and they're not great, it's probably because they haven't learned this stuff yet. And that's why I'm doing this show. This is going to be required listening for all new and old fiends or highly suggested listening for all new fiends in the now and forever. Is this episode is why we're making it mainly. But it's also stuff that a lot of people should know. But if I have somebody on who's a little rough, a lot rough around the edges, and maybe like doesn't even have the perfect liberties at first, you know, they're too minarchist for you or whatever, I have those people on because this is a teaching hospital. This show is like a journalism school. It's a live radio, anarcho-voluntarist, how to do live radio show, throw you in the deep end and let you swim. And that's why I have people on like that. So that guy and anybody like him can quit writing me, because I'm sending his stuff into the spam now. But same with anything else. So there, it's my show. Get off my property. All right. So we talked about the inverted pyramid style of writing in the first section. And in this hour, we're going to talk about the 5 W's. And then we're going to go on to some stuff that's after all this, you know, journalism. Is it really journalism? Is all news biased? Lou says yes. I tend to agree. What is yellow journalism? How to recognize good journalism and identify it from bad journalism, especially since it's such a big topic of fake news these days. And actually looking at the definition of yellow journalism, which is the old style term for, you know, non-journalistic stuff pretending to be journalism, the president's tweets would all fall into that. Like, you know, it's yellow journalism is basically like things pretending to be news that have no research and nothing to back them up. Like, Obama's spying on me, says the president who's expanding the spying capabilities of his government on everyone. But so let's talk about the 5 W's, because I know that I know that Lou was really psyched about this and wanted to make sure we covered it. So what are the 5 W's, Lou?
The 5 W's, I'm going to read from the description here. Yep. The 5 W's and 1 H, or the 6 W's, are questions whose answers are considered basic in information gathering or problem solving. They're often mentioned in journalism
new style research and police investigations, they constitute a formula for getting the complete story on a subject. According to the principle of the five W's, a report can only be considered complete if it answers these questions, starting with an interrogative word. What happened? Who was involved? Where did it take place? When did it take place? Why did that happen? Some authors ask add a sixth question, how, to the list, though how can be covered by what, when, or where.
Yeah, so it's what, how, where, when, and why. And you should be thinking of all of that, even if you have to write it down at first, when you're giving any kind of story to anybody that you want to be read widely. You know, and also, even if you don't want it to be read widely, like if you're sending out, you know, if Nick is sending out a press release to like 20 people in his area who are interested in buying exotic beast meat, you know, that's his audience. It's not a wide audience. It's 20 people, but they, you know, he has to tell them what happened. Where did this meat? I don't know. You wouldn't really need all of these to sell meat, but you might if the product was really the meat seller, the, you know, really smart high school dropout meat seller. I mean, I think I would include that in the description. Of your service, you know. You should call your company Dropout Meats. I'm kind of kidding, but it would be eye-catching, and people would say, what does that mean? And you could tell them your heartwarming story of how you decided that high school was getting in your way. And, you know, I'll say this to anybody who ever says, but you need a high school education. I'm 52 years old. I've done a lot of things in my life. I've done a lot of jobs that have made more than minimum wage too, and I've never been asked to prove that I went to high school. I've barely been asked for the last 20 years if I went to high school. It doesn't come up. You know, it used to be when I was doing jobs that had job applications, I'd have to say, yeah, you know, high school diploma and, you know, 2 years of college or whatever, but nobody ever asked me to prove that. And I really don't think anybody ever called up those schools to see if I went to them. I'm not saying lie, but I'm saying that the value of a college education is vastly overrated unless you want to be a doctor or a scientist and or an engineer. And I think that I think you can be an engineer without going to college if you're really smart. And I think that for lesser jobs, there's no way that in most situations you'll ever have to prove that you have a high school diploma. So moving on, want to read more about the five W's there, guys?
Nick?
Sure. Nick? Are we moving on to the history part, I believe?
Yeah. Rhetoric.
Starts off the top, says rhetoric. A standard series of questions has been a way of formulating or analyzing rhetorical questions since classical antiquity. The rhetor Hermagoras of Temnos, as quoted in Pseudo-Augustine's De Rhetorica, defines seven circumstances as the loci of an issue. These are so many words I don't know how to pronounce.
You high school dropout, but you know what? If you finished high school in 2 years of college these days, you still wouldn't know these words.
That's true.
You'd know how to express your feelings, though, but you wouldn't even know how to put it into a, you know, inverted triangle format. You just yell. You just screech.
You'd know how to vote.
You'd know how to vote and fill out an unemployment form and a welfare form. Seriously, they teach that now.
Wow. All right.
Enough of this.
We'll come back.
We don't need to know where this came from.
No.
Just use it. Just use it. Use it. Use it. Use it. Meow. Meow.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by BIPCOT. Thank you for being a fiend.
Yeah.
talk about journalism, how to be a journalist, how to do things journalistically. We talked about the inverted pyramid format of communication and writing. We talked about the five W's. We talked about not bearing the lead. We talked about watching the clock, being ready to catch. Did we talk about being ready to catch? That was my three things. Watch the clock, don't bury the lead, and be ready to catch. Being ready to catch, if I didn't say it clearly enough, is just lose breathing too hard in the mic, is when you're agreeing together that you're going to discuss a topic. Like, we've passed some links back and forth, and you want to talk about, you're going somewhere with it. You want to talk about a certain thing. Like, we're going to talk about yellow journalism next, which basically is my cue to tell the other people, pull up that link on yellow journalism. So when I throw and say, hey, Nick, can you read the first paragraph of the yellow journalism article on Wikipedia? Nick isn't going, which is really bad radio, because it happens occasionally on this show because we're a teaching hospital, but it doesn't happen very often on any show before and after us on radio. And if it happens too often, a little more than teaching hospital amount, it sounds amateurish. But you can get away with it once in a while if you have your stuff together, and we have our stuff together. So, Nick, would you read the first paragraph, please, of the yellow journalism page on Wikipedia?
Oh, shoot.
Seriously?
Are I'm you so serious? Sorry. No, are I you thought I freaking, dropped out there for a second.
Freaking serious.
This is such a terrible. This is too embarrassing.
Hey, yeah, I'm going to turn it into an example. Do you have it, Lou? Do you have it ready?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, Lou.
Yellow
Lou, you're celebrating 3 years of Freedom Fiendery as to Nick's what? Two? One and a half?
Almost 3 years.
And Nick's not on as often as Lou. All right, Nick's a pro. Go, Nick. I mean, Lou. Lou's a pro. There we go.
Yellow journalism, or the yellow press, is a type of journalism that presents little or no legitimate, well-researched news and instead uses eye-catching headlines to sell more newspapers. Techniques may include exaggerations or news events, scandal-mongering, or sensationalism. By extension, the yellow journalism is used today as a pejorative to decry any journalism that treats news in an unprofessional or unethical fashion. So, I guess...
In other words, mainstream news.
Yeah, well, for
and
my...
a lot of independent news.
Well, for my journalism class days back in, probably about 83 or 84,
when they taught
maybe,
it in college, yeah.
Well, this was actually middle school. But anyway, this type of journalism that I just described would be the old tabloids, the National Enquirer. I think they're still out there. You don't see too many sightings of Elvis these days, but or the alien abductions. But yeah, there's still a lot of that out
but
there.
But it actually came from like actual news. I mean, those are obviously intentional yellow journalism. Yeah. But William Randolph Hearst was known for it, you know, like he did it with the San Francisco Examiner in 1887. It's not new. Mm-hmm. And it's used a lot with it's hard to think of examples because there's so much what I would call link bait now, which isn't even really even pretending to be news, although it is kind of pretending to be news because I think sometimes people can't tell the difference. Link bait is internet stuff that solely exists to get you to link on to click on pages because the people who run it make a fraction of a penny for every time someone clicks on the page because there's ads on it. A lot of times, an example, a lot of sites that have it, they'll have like, you know, an article that's actually useful, like all the states in America arranged in order of the best to worst places to retire. And actually, it's usually worst to best, and it's one page per state. So to get to find out, you know, where you should actually move, probably, according to this article, which I read an article like this recently, and it interests me because, you know, in 10 years, we're going to be retired and DJ's not going to have to work. And I'll probably still do this, but I won't have to work. Hopefully, you know, if things work out, and we may not want to be living where we are, and where we're living now is some of it's based on, you know, she has to live somewhere where there are an abundance of law firms so she could get a job as a paralegal, but that won't be an issue. You know, we could live somewhere even more rural if we wanted or whatever. But there's a lot of things that would go into whether or not someone would want to retire in a place, like access to hospitals, cost of living, taxation, things like that. And for us, things like, you know, firearm carry laws. So this article I wanted to see, and it actually turned out that our state, Wyoming, was deemed the best retirement state. We're already here. But I had
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
One of my own sacred rules of journalism, which was I ignored the clock. I got clock blocked. I was not mouse pocketing, but I did get clock blocked. And so we have a new thing that we do that I guess these two haven't been on a show since we started doing it, which is meowing when someone misses it. So I had the feed turned down too low and I missed it. And it's a good example of what not to do. But you guys, next time that happens, if I'm not wrapping it up, B, just go, meow, meow, meow. Meowing at the beginning of an episode means, a segment means you're having fun. At the end of the episode means, wrap it up, B. All right, so I want to talk a little more about yellow journalism, how to recognize bad journalism.
Historically, and there's also reference to this in a documentary called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Yellow journalism has been used to promote propaganda as an example to
personal agendas.
But also doing some state baiting, by the way.
Yeah.
So if you look at the promotion of the war on cannabis, that was promoted by Hearst, partly for political reasons so that the politicians could grab more power, but also so that hemp would be outlawed and the forestry that he owned would be able to be used for paper and not have to deal with the competition from hemp. And then he had also, I can't remember which war it was. It may have been the Spanish-American War, but he had did a lot of the state baiting and promotion of beating the war drum on behalf of the government to get that war sold to the population.
Yep. And that's kind of continued. I was told this by Nima Vidati, who started this show with me almost 6 years ago, who was an actual like evening news reporter and talking head. You know, he actually went out and gathered the news and created stories, but then and edited it, and then was the guy you saw on the evening news in Wyoming on it was either ABC or CBS. He worked at one here and one of the other ones in Washington, and he quit them both to deliver pizzas because he made more money and he had more freedom. So that also tells you something about journalism and why people don't get into it anymore. But you really also don't have a lot of freedom. I mean, there's rare exceptions like our friend Ben Swan. But, you know, how much freedom does he have, too? Like, he had to delete all of his, you know, internet accounts before he could take his new job being the guy who tells real news at CBS somewhere.
Yeah. So, and happy birthday to Nima.
Oh, is it his birthday today?
It is now.
Oh, right. Happy birthday, Nima. That's good. Whee! It's good that it's his. Because he taught me a lot about journalism, so it's good that we're wishing him a happy birthday on this episode. So I'd say that what he said was that, you know, like the guy who owns the ABC news station in your town or NBC or CBS or CNN, you know, who does the actual local news reporting or statewide or, you know, countywide news reporting in your area, the guy who runs that station does not have a personal financial interest in the war on drugs, probably. But the reason they still propagate that and do these stories of the police as heroes for kicking in a door, it's about access. And it's really sleazy what the police do. Is basically they say, you know, if you paint us in a bad light, you know, if you do the story about the corrupt cop, you will lose your access to the police. Like, you know, all the other news station in town will tell them everything they want to know that we want to tell them. And when you call us, we'll just give you, you know, we'll tell you. And also getting it earlier, like the people they favor will get the news earlier. They'll get tips, you know, the police information line will call the news guy. Whereas when you do not play ball, you know, you have to read it off the AP wire, like every other news agency. So that's how they do it. And, you know, you could we make the argument that all police are corrupt because they're police. But I'm talking about in the world that those people live in the normal world where 98% of the world live, where they think police are a good thing.
Well, also, yeah. And that's the key point. Some people don't have to be told to state bait. They don't have to be told to
say that
we need this, you know. There's a H.L. Mencken quote that says, the state doesn't just want you to obey, it wants you to want you to obey.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That guy was a great newsman. I think he founded the Baltimore Sun or was one of the early reporters there. And he was also libertarian, and he was also a great newsman and a great thinker with a lot of great quotes. And unfortunately, he was also a pretty big bigot and racist, which kind of makes it hard to want to quote him. But most people don't know about that about him. Did you know that about him?
I had heard it. I didn't know too much about what his feelings were on the subjects.
Yeah, he's a libertarian, so they're probably economic. I'm joking. All right, so moving right along. So I would say when you're reading news, you know, if you want to separate the wheat from the chaff, which people today don't know what that is because they don't teach it in school and no one works on a farm anymore. But if you want to separate the gold from the BS, you know, some things you could look for. One is agenda. Another, you know, like bias. Really, that's the main thing to look for. Also personal bias, like I don't know. I guess if the guy who owned the local news company also owned, you know, like if he does a lot of things on how the schools need more money, but he also owns, you know, a company that is a contractor that builds things for schools or something like that. Like you can sometimes follow the money. And in a small town, you don't need to follow it. Really, people know and they don't talk about it. But if you ask them, they might know. Sensationalism in headlines, look for that. You know, a good, honest news headline pulls you in without lying to you, you know, without pumping it up.
It's true.
Like, you know, if you want an example of what is generally fake news, I would say look at anything any politician says, but particularly and lately some of Trump's tweets. I mean, the guy's like your drunken uncle, but he's got his, you know, he controls the biggest military in the world and
wants to expand the police. They say a lot of the same things.
Yeah, him and the drunken uncle. I don't have a drunken uncle anymore. He died of liver failure, actually. But yeah. So you got any more on mouse pocketing? I got one more thing. You said in passing during the break in the first hour, Lou, that all news is biased. And I was almost going to argue that and say, well, you know, not an unedited film of what happened. And I'm like, even that can be biased. I mean, that's probably the least biased thing there can be. First of all, though, most people don't want to sit and watch you know, a long video of something. And this is something that I would recommend to anybody who does any kind of photojournalism, you know, like video journalism. Like if you film the cops doing something wrong and it's like a 20-minute video, here's what is the most honest practice you can do with that is, you know, edit out the 2 minutes where the cop abuses the person and post that and say, you know, video of cop beating up my friend or whatever. And then also post the complete unedited video on a, you know, as a different video on YouTube, but link each of them in the show notes for the other one. That's the real way to do it. You know, like edit it without editing, edit it for length without lying in your editing, but then also provide the unedited video. That's what Ian Freeman does. I like that.
Well, as far as my statement about all news being biased, the information is subject to the knowledge of the person that is conveying it. So, example, if Nick is doing a news story on libertarianism because he only knows Freedom Fiends and Bad Quaker and doesn't know who Will Grigg is,
yeah,
the information is limited by his ignorance, by his lack of knowledge, by his being a punk juvenile delinquent young whippersnapper that hasn't gotten out there and explored the greater philosophy. Are you feeling small yet, poodle boy?
Although, you know what? If you only were going to listen to two libertarians, the Freedom Fiends and Bad Quaker wouldn't be a bad choice.
Exactly.
It would definitely be better than listening to, like, you know, Adam Kokesh and Molyneux.
Yeah.
Although I know a lot of people who that's their entire view of liberty. Also, I would say that it's kind of hard to not have bias in something, because the fact that you want people to see something is a bias. You know,
yeah.
The fact that you want people to see police abuse is that you believe that there's not enough representation of the fact that there is widespread and systemic, universally, there is widespread systemic police, you know, abusing people. And police would say that you have an agenda for posting that because you're just showing the few bad apples. And it's odd always, and I will say this always, that they use the term exclusively almost a few bad apples when the rest of that saying is a few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. And that's how bad apples work.
Interestingly enough, when it comes to immigrants, they use the argument of you have a jelly bowl beans. Of Skittles, and Skittles. Some of them might be poisonous. How many do you eat? Okay, well, apply that to apples. You have a bunch of cops. Some of them may be bad apples. How many do you eat?
Good point. All of them? Wait, you can eat cops? I don't eat cops.
I bacon, get you, though. Not pig.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Wow.
Ouch. So, but anyway, yeah, a reporter, it's they're limited by their knowledge and their experiences. They may have preconceived notions, and is not necessarily a intentional trying to get out there and give out bad information or try to sway people one way or another. It's they are very limited. When it comes to like the economic discussions, if you're listening to Fox Business or CNBC during the day, unless you have somebody that's educated in Keynesianism, the Chicago School of Monetarism, Austrian business cycle theory, public choice economics, things like that, unless people are well versed in all of these different schools, they can only give one viewpoint, and it's based upon that limited knowledge that they have. And if you look at the knowledge problem, as Hayek explained it, that's why central planning always fails. But it's also why you can't have, you know, solid journalism, or why you can't have unbiased journalism, because it is.
Although Fox, go ahead.
And it is subject to the limitations of humans. So
I will say, if you're only going to watch one Fox News, Fox Business News would be a lot better than watching Fox News.
Yeah.
Yeah. It tends to lean a little more free market.
Free-ish.
When we get back, we're going to talk about, should you ever call the police? My answer is no, with an asterisk, and that may shock some people. The asterisk part.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, we're talking about journalism for 9/10 of this show. In this last segment, Redemption, the third act, I'm going to talk about, is it ever okay to call the police? And the common belief in hip hop is no, stitches get stitches. And the common belief in libertarianism you know, hardcore, you know, anarcho-capitalism, libertarianism, like what we more or less are, is no, you never call the police no matter what. Now, there's also a thing that's really popular. Well, there's a thing that's popular in news, which is if it leads, it bleeds, which means if it bleeds, it leads, which is, you know, the headline is the most gory thing that happened that day. And we're going to talk about some gory problems and would you call the cops? And I also did an example at the end of the last segment of kind of like shock, you know, cliffhanger, which is another thing we haven't discussed. It's kind of like slightly sensationalist headline before a break. So you'll come back. And to a lot of people listening on the radio, you know, when I say, would you call the cops if someone was being tortured? You'd be like, of course I would. But I actually posted that that today to a bunch of libertarians on Facebook, and a bunch of them said, no, I would not call the police if I heard someone being tortured. Snitches get stitches. Don't snitch. Never talk to the police. And, you know, I said, I probably would if I heard someone being tortured. A lot of people said they'd run up into the house and give the guy a citizen's arrest and things like that. And first of all, a lot of people who say they'd never call the police and or they'd run up into houses, interestingly, are people who live at home and are to some extent supported by their parents and to some extent have never gone out in the world and, you know, lived life to its fullest and actually been completely supportive of yourself. I find that weird. And a lot of people give me a lot of crap for like making fun of people who still live at home. And I think Nick is the exception because he lives at home, but he's like camping in his parents' yard in this old weird camper. You're on their property, but you're barely in their home and you're running a business and you dropped out of school where your dad was the principal, I might add, if people can envision what complications that might have involved. But so I was kind of offended, really, that like I would not call the police if I saw a drunk driver. That's something that came up recently. Like some lady lost her Liberty card among her friends for calling the police.
No, not among her friends. Amongst the audacious caucus of the Libertarian Party.
Oh, Danny, who lives with his mother, literally, and I know his home address. Yeah, Danny does live with his mother. Yeah, a bunch of people got really upset about it. And here's my thing. Like, okay, James Weeks was one of the people who got really upset at me, you know, and like kind of took it to an extreme, like making fun of me of, you know, you're not a libertarian, blah, blah, blah. But James Weeks says something that I'll also state too, that anybody who doesn't love the government is my friend. And I don't love the government. And I would not call the cops in most situations. But I would probably call the cops if I heard somebody in a house where I couldn't see and it really sounded like they were being tortured. Not like rough sex. I know what that sounds like. I would probably call. And the reason this came up was somebody was recently arrested in South Dakota for torturing cats for kicks. Like he was getting cats from shelters and taking them home and torturing them to death. And he's going to jail. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not saying the state solution is the best thing for that, but I say to him that he's going to suffer for what he did because that's really creepy to me. I have no problem with eating animals for food, but the idea of torturing one. I would possibly go into a house where I heard someone torturing an animal because someone torturing an animal is probably less likely to be capable of, you know, taking you out than someone who's torturing a person. Someone who's torturing an animal is probably an unarmed teenager. Someone that's torturing a human is probably an armed adult, I would guess. And also, like the people who said, yeah, man, I'd run up in the house and do a citizen's arrest. It's like, first of all, if there was a private police organization like Detroit's Theft Management in my state, I'd call them instead of the police. Or if I knew a good militia that were honorable people, I'd call them instead of the police. But so, real quick, someone's being tortured. You can hear it. Would you call the police?
Yes.
I wouldn't want to, but I probably would.
There you go. I would not take pleasure out of it like that lady took pleasure out of calling the cops from the drunk driver. And I've been around drunk drivers recently. I just let them get way ahead of me. I don't come near them. I do not call the police on that.
She laughed and bragged about it. I think that's where she really got in trouble.
I'd be kind of bummed out about it.
Yeah.
She, my trolley she was, dilemma.
She was happy about it. I saw the original post.
That is so square. So, kids, write good journalism. Don't love the state. But if someone says, I'd never call the police, ask them if they live at home.